On episode 428 of the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet Dallas Hartwig and discuss his book, The Four Season Solution. You can find the full show notes for this episode at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/428.
Have you decided you're ready to make a change? To reclaim your health and fitness? The 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is here for you. I'm your host, Alan Meisner. I'm an NSAM certified personal trainer with a specialization in corrective exercise and fitness nutrition. Let me be your coach as you find your way on your health and fitness journey. All right, let's go.
Hello. I've put off recording this intro for this episode, and I'll probably be late publishing it, but something has been weighing on me. And in fact, I actually wrote this intro out because I didn't want to just wing it. This is a really tough conversation for me to have with you. I wanted to avoid this topic, and I really can't do it any longer. So please bear with me for a few minutes, okay? COVID-19 has many casualties. For most of us, our lives are significantly altered, perhaps forever. One factor keeps hitting me like a knife to my heart. The people at most risk are suffering from what we call lifestyle diseases. With 67% of U.S. overweight, and probably just as many with conditions like prediabetes, diabetes, and heart disease, that's a lot to swallow. A lot of potential victims. I want you to take your health back. I want you to change your trajectory and not be a victim to your health. Today, you can make a decision that will turn things around. 40 Plus Fitness online personal training is exactly what you need to do that. Online personal training offers some unique benefits that are very important during this time. You don't have to go to a gym to meet a trainer. The gyms are closed anyway. You have the full support of a personal trainer that specializes on working with 40 Plus. I'm with you all the way through the 40 Plus Fitness app, email, and weekly group calls. And you have a supportive community to keep you going. At 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/health, I'm making a special offer for the remainder of April. You can join at the legacy rate. I don't offer this lightly. I didn't want to go down on my rates ever, but I'm doing this for you. I think this is really important. Change can seem hard, especially when you don't have the support you need. I am that support. Don't let another day go by and not do the right thing for your health. Pause this podcast if you need to. Dallas and I will be here when you get back. Go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/health and join 40 Plus Fitness online group personal training right now. All right. Thank you for bearing with me on that. Our guest today is a functional medicine practitioner, certified sports nutritionist, and a licensed physical therapist who specializes in treating lifestyle-related hormonal, digestive, and metabolic health issues. He is also the co-creator of the original Whole30 program, which has helped millions of people get healthier and feel great. With no further ado, here's Dallas Hartwig. Dallas, welcome to 40 Plus Fitness.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's just an honor for me to have you on the show. You're someone I've really wanted to get in touch with for a while. And when I got your book, The Four Season Solution, and I started reading through it, I was like, this is profound. This, because I had sort of already taken the nutrition thing to a kind of a seasonal idea, thinking through ancestral eating. And, you know, my Northern European family would not have been eating papayas in December.
Right.
And so I would typically do, and I kind of coined the phrase seasonal ketosis.
Ooh, nice.
Because that's a natural place that I found myself at. Now, I did it backwards because I like football season and beer and hanging out with my friends. And then there's...
And that's not wrong.
Yeah. And so I kind of switched it up. But I have to admit, I have found myself very much where you talk about in the book, in that kind of this perpetual summer, which we're going to talk about. So I really did resonate with the message that you have in the book. And I think the folks, anyone that's going to read your book is going to as well.
Awesome.
So now, part of what you have in the book and you talk about are these rhythms. And, you know, we can talk about circadian rhythms. We can talk about the rhythms that happen over the course of seasons, because everybody, particularly in the Northeast, in the North, is going to experience some form of seasons. In the Southeast, they'll call it 10 seasons, rain, hot, a little bit more rain, hot, and then, you know, a little bit more rain, but
right. And a little bit more hot. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Down here in Panama, you know, we really only have rainy and hot. And so we don't have the longer, shorter days and things like mm-hmm. that. So it's a little harder to kind of go into the whole that, but there are those rhythms. And I think most people that are listening to this are going to kind of resonate with that idea that there's, oh yeah, there's these seasons and there's different things that we do and should be doing, longer days, shorter days. And then there's the seasons of life. And so you kind of use that concept as you go through this to build, for lack of a better word, as I went into reading it and thinking through, as a helix, mm-hmm. our life as we go forward, going through these series of rhythms. But we've got to get in sync with those rhythms if we really want to be well. So can you kind of talk through those different rhythms that we should be paying attention to and how they're going to benefit us for wellness?
For sure. And, you know, that's both a simple question and a really complex question. One of the things that I'm most interested in is identifying patterns. And what I started to identify over the last 6 to 10 years is a sort of recurring fractal pattern of expansion and contraction that occurs on a daily rhythm. Actually, there's shorter rhythms called ultradian rhythms, and we're familiar with REM cycles when we're sleeping. So there's a very short rhythm. There's the very obvious daily rhythm or circadian rhythm. There's also the same expansion contraction cycle over the course of a year. And then we have this expansion contraction cycle over the course of a lifetime. And there's so many fascinating comparisons between all those different cycles and what happens for us experientially, motivationally, emotionally, physiologically, metabolically. Like, there's so many comparisons there. And that fascinates me. And what I started to do was layer in and sort of glean some of the patterns that are already encoded into our DNA. These are biological principles that have always governed the way we live, that govern basically all life on Earth is governed by these different cycles. And the circadian rhythm is a really obvious one. Across the course of the day, we have light, we have dark, we have sunrise, we have sunset, we have bright midday light. Like, all of these things send physiological signals to our bodies. And they affect our neurochemistry, they affect our metabolism, they affect our alertness, they affect our motivation, they affect our pleasure responses to things. And so it changes this, there's this entire, like, I sort of envision this almost sort of pulsing, throbbing, sort of amoeba-shaped thing. Like, we are constantly in motion in all of these different ways. And what I seek to do in this book, and it's given some simple structure and organization to that. And that is basically just observing the natural patterns that are already there in nature. So I talk about rhythms with what we eat. I talk about rhythms with the light-dark cycle, including sleep, but not limited to sleep. I talk about rhythms and oscillations and that same expansion-contraction cycle in the way that we move across the course of a day, across the course of a year, and across the course of a lifetime. And I talk about connection. And I think that's one of the things that is overlooked in a lot of discussions about health and wellness is the sense of connection, not just to other people. That's kind of the obvious one. There's a large and growing conversation about social isolation and loneliness and the social, emotional, and health costs of loneliness. But that's not the entire story of connection. So we also have this opportunity to connect deeply with ourselves, connect deeply with a sense of place and belonging and home and sort of Mother Earth. And then we have this sense of connection to a larger purpose, a sense of contribution to something larger than ourselves, which is also correlated with some of the happiest and most long-lived people on Earth. So it's complex in that there are multiple moving pieces in this expansion contraction cycle, but it's also incredibly simple because what it does is allows us to get back in touch with our intuitive rhythms that are present in our bodies already, and we've just learned to ignore them, or we've never learned to listen to them in the first place, so that the closer we get to aligning with these natural rhythms, the easier we make healthy decisions, because it's just what we want to do intuitively. So one of the major problems with the modern world is that we have largely eliminated those rhythms. We've flattened everything. So we've made everything like a light switch. It's off or it's on. It's go or it's stop. And all of these things, we're at work or we're not. We are exercising or we're sedentary. And it's very binary and polarized. And one of the things I argue for in this book is that across all of these different domains of living, we should be much more like a sine wave than a right angle or a straight line. because there are no straight lines and right angles in nature. They're all curvaceous and beautiful and cyclical. So that's the sort of conceptual background. And then the book gets much more specific into each of those areas and kind of how, and my recommendations of how to actually implement those different things.
Yeah, I think, you know, intuitively, we kind of know these things. It's, if we do shift work, someone who does shift work, you know, there's plenty of science out there to say that they struggle with their health and wellness because the shift work interferes with their normal circadian sleep rhythm. They don't know when to be awake and when to be asleep. And it really impacts their health overall. And so it's that when we break one of these, I'm not going to say a rule, but just a natural rhythm of how we should probably be living our lives, how we've lived our lives for millennia, it really does take a toll on our bodies. Now, I want to kind of start, because I think the easiest way to think about this beyond the of course, the circadian rhythm is kind of an easy one to do, but most people think that relates to sleep, and you believe it relates to all of it. But I want to talk about particularly the four seasons of the year, because like I said, it was fascinating to me. I thought of it from a nutrition perspective of, okay, my ancestors would not have had access to this food, therefore I probably shouldn't be eating that food during this time of the year. I need to have a winter. I need to have a time of famine where I'm predominantly eating meat and fat, and that's my food products because that's all that's available. And there's going to be a period of time when I'm eating leafy greens, and then there's going to be blueberry season where I'm just going to go crazy eating the blueberries. So it was easy for me to conceptualize this from a food perspective, but you take it across all four of those dynamics, the food, the movement, the sleep, and then, of course, the relationships, both with ourselves and with others. Can you kind of walk through the four seasons and kind of give us an idea of how, over the course of four seasons, that would impact each of those four pillars of health? And then why we find ourselves today kind of stuck in this summer? Because we've made this linear, like you said, we've smoothed everything out, and we happen to smooth it out at a time what we love, which is that dopamine summer.
Totally. So I mentioned expansion contraction cycle. So there is kind of the two sides of the coin there. And I group the four seasons into two and two. So spring and summer tend to be all about expansion. They tend to be about stimulation and fun and novelty and excitement and exploration and hard work and stress. And all of that is totally okay. Like, that's a natural rhythm. So it's akin to kind of morning and midday. And this, the experience of the, like, sort of the titillation of early spring when we're like, let's go do some work in the garden or clean the garage, like that sort of spontaneous motivation to do things or to start a new exercise program or to go on a trip, or like the draw towards new exciting things is driven by dopamine and then the stress hormones of adrenaline and cortisol, which help us adapt to that stress and maximize our sort of performance under stress. And that's all good stuff. And I think that sometimes we make the mistake of sort of idealizing some other metabolic processes or neurotransmitters or motivational experiences and then demonizing others. And what I'm saying here is that actually all of these things have important functions, because if we didn't have some of those motivational experiences to go try new things, go places, meet new people, we would stay at home and probably starve to death because we didn't have that spontaneous motivation to kind of go out and explore. So those are all really important things. So spring and summer are the expansion phase. Fall and winter are the contraction phase. It's the balancing point. And fall and winter are about slowing down, restoring and recovering from the stressful spring and summer. It is about coming home and reconnection and being grateful and being generous and knowing our place. And it's all of the ideas that are really kind of epitomized by American Thanksgiving, this sense of like gratitude and connection and generosity that are such hallmarks of fall. And then winter then is this experience of deep healing and restoration and contraction and withdrawal into like the most intimate parts of yourself and the most intimate connections with people. It's kind of the opposite of the summer barbecues and block parties. It is sitting around the fireplace with your closest circle. And all of those things are important. So there's no good or bad here. What there is this expansion and contraction cycle. that works beautifully when it's in balance and works really poorly when it's out of balance. So fall and winter then are symbolized by the neurotransmitters of serotonin and melatonin. Serotonin is well known for its role in mood, in pleasure, in feeling a sense of contentment and connection and belonging. And it's a very peaceful, placid, satisfied experience. And of course, melatonin being the sort of darkness hormone, so to speak, is all about getting us into that very deep, contracted, restorative phase of sleep, or in the case of deep winter, a very kind of therapeutic experience. The problem is that back at the dawn of agriculture, roughly 10 or 12,000 years ago, and as we started to kind of get civilization going and ownership societies and economics and urbanization, the whole thing sort of started to shift from being hunter-gatherers in sort of integrated into their local environment to starting to take control of the environment at first through agriculture and stabilizing the food supply. But then through, you know, later through the Industrial Revolution with artificial light, we started to kind of really craft the environment around us. And that's where we went off course, really, because kind of starting back at the Agricultural Revolution and then later through the Industrial and Technological Revolutions, because what we did is we got stuck in this summer mode, this mode of success, of hard work, of accumulating resources, of like go, 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 always on excitement and fun and expansion. And we got stuck there because it's good for civilization. It's good for the human species as a whole in that expansive mode. And of course, you look at the population of humans on Earth, we have done plenty of expansion, but it is out of balance. And what the challenge there, and I explain this in the book, but part of the challenge is that it's so fun and exciting to experience the dopamine and adrenaline and cortisol components of life, the excitement and the pleasure and the reward aspects of it, that's very difficult to tear ourselves away from that to have the corresponding contraction experiences. So I write in the book that we are stuck in a chronic summer. And if you think about having the feeling you have at the end of summertime, let's say in the Northern Hemisphere, sort of at the end of August and early September, you're like, oh, I'm so tired. Like, I can't wait for the days to start to get shorter and they start to cool down and maybe the kids go back to school and like things start to kind of settle and get a little bit saner because we're so tired. And that same sensation is the one that a lot of us have like deep in our bones over the course of years and decades, because we're living in a chronic summer. And the reason that's a major problem is because the behaviors in the summertime, if they are stretched out over, again, years or decades, those chronic summer behaviors produce chronic disease outcomes. So all of this gets tied together as we can not only prevent and reverse chronic disease by stepping out of that chronic summer situation, but we can actually make all of the rich, beautiful human experiences better by reintroducing a balanced oscillating system.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of the key of it, is it's exciting. We're out there, we're doing stuff. And particularly as we start talking about sleep, I think food people get, it's like we have access to summer foods all year round. And so we're eating that all the time. We're getting all that sugar, all that, you know, the blueberries are there every day, every season.
Right.
I keep getting them every day. And if I keep doing that, my body's not getting that retraction that it contraction that it should be getting later. But with sleep, kind of the thing is, and you know, it's the badge of honor that I only sleep 5 hours a night and
right.
I do this stuff, you know, and I've got all this thing, these responsibilities that, you know, put the kids to bed and then I got to catch up with this and then I got to do that. And then I'm so wound up. Well, I guess I'll just go ahead and watch Netflix for an hour or so, or four or six, and then I got to catch up on Facebook because
totally
all my friends that have been up till 2 o'clock in the morning, they're also posting now. So that's coming through. And we're giving ourselves all this artificial light, which wouldn't exist. We're not going with the natural cycle. And I think that's one of the, to me, that's where the, like the aha moment with what you were going. And when you went through and said in your book, you had your other book, which is, it starts with food. But in this book, you said, you know, maybe sleep is an easier, better place to really think about this. And I'm agreeing with you here. If you sleep more when it's darker longer, that's probably how our ancestors did it for millennia, and it's probably a good life lesson for us. So can you kind of just talk about why sleep is so important to us and how we can use the seasons as a kind of a flag for us of better sleep and better health?
Certainly. You know, there's this principle of evolutionary mismatch, which might not be a familiar term, but the concept is familiar, and you've already spoken to it in that in our ancient past, in the way that our kind of bodies have evolved, our bodies expect oscillation. We expect certain types of kind of environmental conditions, and the modern world, the way we've constructed, is extremely new to our physiology. We haven't had time, evolutionarily speaking, to adapt to that. So we have a mismatch between what our physiology expects and what our environment provides us, or what we provide ourselves through the modern environment. And that same principle, so you've spoken to food and said, okay, we can actually solve a ton of the problems with food by eating what is locally and seasonally available. And that's a beautiful, elegant solution to food, is literally just doing that one simple thing, is eating what's available to you locally and seasonally. And of course, that takes into account what your local geography is. And in Panama, you've got a different and certainly much smaller amplitude or smaller oscillation season to season, but there's a small change. It's of course much larger at higher and lower latitudes, respectively. I guess higher latitudes north and south of the equator. And there's another principle that's akin to that with sleep, which is basically you should track, or your sleeping patterns should be reasonably close to the sunrise and sunset times wherever you live. And that doesn't mean that in, you know, the northern United States that you go to bed at 5 p.m., you know, in the wintertime, because the sun goes down that early. But the closer you can track that, this is like a beautiful, simple kind of heuristic or sort of shortcut. The closer you are to that, the better your health and wellness is going to be across the board. And that's true for a number of reasons. The single largest one is that our physiology is incredibly dependent on the light-dark cycle. And that's something that has been, that I and many other researchers have really underappreciated in years and decades past. And as we start to understand how significantly our metabolism is affected by that light-dark cycle, we can start to identify the downstream consequences of mismatching what's going on outside and the natural rhythms that are there with what we are, with the environments we are providing with artificial light, and especially to your point, the sort of staying up late, which is basically a summertime behavior, right? Where the kind of long days, short nights, and what we basically have is a chronic shortage of sleep, but it's not just shortage of sleep, it's actually a deficiency of time spent in darkness. So I kind of reframe that in the book, where it's not just that people need to get more sleep and they need to go to bed earlier and whatever. They also need to spend more time in relative darkness. So there's this principle of mismatch that shows up in the realm of sleep, because we not only do we not have enough time spent in darkness and including sleeping, we also don't have enough exposure to bright natural light. So much of our physiology is dictated by exposure to bright light, because that is one of the triggers for our metabolism to say, oh, I should be awake. Our nervous system gets regulated by that. And we have these, what we call clocks, these genetically encoded mechanisms within almost all of the cells in all of our bodies that have a roughly 24-hour rhythm, but they are made more accurate and more consistent by exposure to bright light. So bright light early in the morning really helps to kind of reset and coordinate all of those clocks, so that as we advance through the day, we have a more coordinated system. And as we get into the hours after sunset or approaching sunset, we have coordinated clocks within our body such that we can start to wind down more naturally. And that requires that we avoid the artificial light after sunset. And that means dimming the lights at home. That means avoiding the computer and tablet and smartphone screens that have a lot of that blue light. Because if you think about blue light, especially when it's quite bright, blue light is effectively the signal that it is midday in sort of blue sky environment. Blue light tells your brain you should be alert, you should be active, and you should have the sort of stress hormones on board so that you can perform maximally. So the experience of summer, of having lots of sun, lots of light, and lots of stress that goes along with all of that, gets stretched over into the evening hours when we have artificial light that we get from all of these screens. So it's quite a well-known recommendation at this point that we should be avoiding blue light in the evenings, especially in the hour or two before bed. I'll maybe extend that even farther and say the longer you get after, or the longer you are awake after sunset, And the more blue light you were exposed to after sunset, wherever you are, the more problems you are likely to have with your circadian rhythm. So which just harkens back to this really simple and elegant solution. You should actually just follow the natural rhythm with a light-dark cycle to the extent that you are able, just like you would follow what is present for you in food with local and seasonal foods. These really simple guidelines, like this is how we go back and this is how we undo some of that evolutionary mismatch to improve our health overall.
Yeah, I did some personal experiments to just kind of see what my sleep cycles were. You know, you wear wearable devices and things like that.
Right.
For about a year or so. And yeah, I'm right on the sleep cycle of about 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. To the minute. I mean, it's like 90 minutes. Now I can sit there.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. And so I was going through that and I would say, okay, what I found was, yeah, in the summertime, I felt okay with just sometimes four, but usually five sleep cycles.
Yeah.
And then when it's the longer winters, and this really hit me when I would travel up to Calgary from Arkansas. And so I would be down in Arkansas. I'd go up to Calgary in July. And it's daylight at 8 o'clock at night. And I'm like, I just want to go to bed, but it's totally daylight. What am I supposed to do? You know?
Yeah.
And so that would really mess with me. That would mess with me as much as traveling to Europe.
For sure.
It really threw me off that there was that much difference in the length of a day and when the sun was out and when it wasn't. And so I recognized that my body was adaptive to the seasons and to the sun. And, you know, obviously everybody knows about jet lag, but these were those kinds of experiences of I sleep longer in the winter just naturally because I never set an alarm. I always go to bed early enough that I almost never have to set an alarm. I go through my sleep cycles. And when I get through a sleep cycle, if it's after, you know, if I know I have to be up at 7, if it's after 5 o'clock, I just get up because I know a 90-minute sleep cycle is not going to work. I'll sleep through the alarm if I even set one, which I typically don't. So I just kind of had these natural, I need to get 5, sometimes 6. And then the winter, I always found it was almost always going to be that extra sleep cycle, which, you know, is just kind of one of those learning opportunities I gave myself by going to bed earlier. So I gave up a lot of Netflix watching for the sake of science and my health. And that's where I found myself.
Yeah. Well, I love that you've already taken on so many of these experiments and just sort of naturally gravitated towards something that's very much in alignment with the entire model that I put forward in the book. Because what I hear you saying is you have gotten better at trusting your own body's instincts and intuitions and not just like hearing them and trusting and acting on them in a way that drifts naturally over time to a much more harmonious and effortless place. I mean, the fact that you can go to bed and just sort of wake up without an alarm really speaks to the rested state that you're in when you do wake up. And I think that's extraordinary and beautiful. So I applaud you for doing those experiments.
Yeah. But let my wife wake me up when I'm not, my whole brain is off. I'm like, wait, totally. Where am I? What's going on? And she's like, oh, we gotta go. And I'm like, oh, I needed one more sleep cycle, but okay,
yeah.
I guess I'm up. But so yeah, I've done a lot of that myself. Cause it's, you know, when you're doing a podcast and doing the health and fitness and you know, this is my thing now, I make that a priority to experiment. And I think everyone should do these experiments. And what's really cool about your book is that you give us a lot of experiments. There's a lot in here that we can't get into all of it. But I did want to cover one more thing before we really get going. And because I do interview a lot of people and I'm fairly agnostic with what people eat, you're going to eat the way you're going to eat. And it's either going to serve you or it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to do those experiments because those experiments are good for you. But one of the things, like I said, I really liked about your book was that it just kind of broke through all of that. And it said, there's going to be periods of the year that you would just naturally be a vegan because it's the blueberries are there, the vegetables and fruits are there, and they're in abundance. And you're going to be just doing that. You're still going to get your protein and do your thing. So I do want to get into the protein aspects because I think that's another huge thing. But then you say, okay, when we get around to the winter time, There's not any more blueberries. There's not as many leafy greens. Mm-hmm. So our diet would naturally have changed. So you kind of break through the diet tribalism because it gets very tribal.
Absolutely. Well, and I think, you know, one of the points I make in the book and I'll make here as well is that one of the reasons why we have such sort of fractured tribal perspectives on nutrition is because the science is extremely inconsistent in its conclusions. You can find a research paper that says people should eat only meat. You can find a research paper that says people should be vegan. They should be extremely low fat. They should be high fat, low carb, and everywhere in between. We look at Mediterranean diets and paleo diets and ketogenic diets. Like there's all of these different things that are really often in quite sort of a conflict with each other, but yet there's research to support all of them. And I view that like you. I mean, I have a broad evolutionary template that says the things that are most likely going to nourish us well are the things that have been around for the longest. So it goes back to the meat, seafood, eggs, vegetables, fruit, nuts and seeds, and naturally occurring fat sources, like which from a conceptual standpoint looks like a quote unquote paleo diet. But I'm less concerned with what is technically Paleolithic and more concerned with like, does this make me healthier? And the beautiful thing that is written into, and not because I wrote it in, but because it's in all of us, and this is to your point, the beautiful thing that's written into our physiology is the ability to adapt to many different nutritional inputs. And so what we have in the research is evidence that we can adapt in positive ways to a low-fat, high-vegetable, kind of plant-based or vegetarian diet. We can also adapt to a meat and fat-based low carbohydrate or even ketogenic dietary approach. We can adapt to something that is more moderate, like a sort of meat and vegetables paleo approach. We can adapt to something like a Mediterranean diet that is, again, rich in many different types of micronutrients. But there's a lot of commonality in all of these things. And so what I look for is patterns and commonality. And what I see in commonality is that the nutritional research that across the board, the nutritional principles that make people healthier include whole food sources, adequate dietary protein, plenty of nutrient-dense plant matter, and some variation across the course of time. And one of the weaknesses of nutritional research is that they're typically difficult to control short-term studies. And so we can come to all sorts of different conclusions with these different dietary approaches. I think there's an opportunity to recognize that the human omnivore is so amazingly adaptable to all these different inputs that we have a seasonal opportunity to implement and gain the benefits of many of these approaches. So for example, a springtime diet that is rich in tender greens and healthy fat sources like avocado and olive oil and rich in foods like poultry and seafood would look a lot like a Mediterranean diet. A summer diet of a wide variety of vegetables and starchy roots and fruit, especially fruit in the kind of mid and late summer, and is lighter on the kind of meat and fat approach, looks a lot like a sort of plant-based diet that still does include some complete protein sources, but it looks a lot more like that sort of, you know, what we now describe as plant-based. A fall diet might look like a paleo type diet that is, again, still based on whole foods that has both meat and vegetables present in wide amounts. So there's an amazing opportunity there to gain all those benefits, to not have to become really zealous and dogmatic about our nutritional approaches, and also still to have all of the health-producing benefits of these different dietary approaches. So I think that's fascinating because it explains all of the conflicting nutritional information. And it just sort of takes away the charge from the diet wars and says, actually, here's what works, here's what we know, and here's what basically everyone in the nutritional realm would agree on. And that's why like someone like Michael Pollan has such a sane, moderate research and kind of research-based and grounded approach, like eat food, mostly plants, not too much. Like that's such a beautiful synopsis of that. And I really support simple solutions. So I think that's a fun way to kind of take some of the charge and the confrontation out of discussions around nutrition.
Yeah, because if you eat that, you're not just going to die.
Right.
But Now, I define wellness as being the healthiest, fittest, and happiest you can be. What are three strategies or tactics to get and stay well?
Ooh, that's such a great question. So I like simple ones. So here's one in the realm of nutrition, which is start moving towards eating foods that are available locally and seasonally. And that in the summertime is really easy because there's a wide range of things. Going to your local farmer's market is a great way to do that. In the wintertime, especially in the higher latitudes, that gets a lot more restrictive. So it might be more challenging there to be limiting some of the more processed foods and especially carbohydrate sources and introducing it. Maybe you have to learn how to cook some new things. But I think there's also a real adaptive metabolic benefit to restricting carbohydrate, to getting a really rich protein source and a lot of healthy dietary fats at each meal, because we have all of the insulin sensitizing and anti-inflammatory effects of that approach as well. So there's lots of great stuff there, but it's literally just eat what's available locally. There is the, just tag this in there, try to do all of your eating during the daylight hours. So not the hours when you have the lights on at home, but during the daylight hours, because that starts to introduce a natural compressed feeding window, or we talk about early or late feeding window. We talk about intermittent fasting. And I think that's a really elegant way to just provide some natural oscillation there. So in the summertime, there's very long windows of time when you'd be eating. In the winter, they're much narrower. And then around movement, and I haven't talked much about movement so far, but if you are not currently doing some kind of resistance training, functional fitness training, something that is based, that is the anchor for a strong, resilient body, introduce that now. And lots of times we take people who are somewhat sedentary or who kind of are underactive, and we overemphasize the cardio metabolic or the cardiovascular fitness training, and we underemphasize getting good joint mobility and having good strength, because building strong muscles and bone density and joints that can tolerate very functional ranges of movement is highly correlated with the ability to maintain independence into our later years. So that's one of those things that is an anchor in my program. And I think the last thing I'll say, and again, circling back to connection, most of us spend lots of time in easy, shallow, stimulating, fun, light conversations, either with coworkers or people on social media or friends. We don't tend to do as much of that contractive fall type, deep, vulnerable, intimate, kind of open, present, grateful, grounded communication that would be more like fall. So I would encourage you, whether it's with your partner or spouse or with some of your closest friends or family or children or parents, invest in that experience. And it's unfamiliar and it's scary and we don't quite know how to do it. And especially for us men, it feels awkward because our fathers probably didn't do very much of that. And it might not be viewed as sort of masculine, but really human beings need connection. And I think in general, if this is a safe stereotype, I think men are particularly isolated because society has taught us that we need to be strong and invulnerable and tough and we need to take care of ourselves. And usually it means it's hard for us to open up about what's going on for us psycho-emotionally, what we're feeling, what we're experiencing. So this is my support for and suggestion that we do a lot more of that, men and women across the board. But I think for us men, it's a particularly difficult and scary and unfamiliar thing because it wasn't modeled to us in earlier generations. So those are my three.
Great. Dallas, thank you. This book, like I said, it really is an awesome book. And I am going to be going back into it time and time again because there's so many lessons in there. We just scratched the surface. Your concepts on anchors and how we're going to do this pivot, how we make it practically fit into getting out of our summers and getting into the lifestyle that's going to work for us. Again, there's so much there that's not just theoretical, but is totally practical, really deep, good book. I appreciate the opportunity to read it. I really appreciate the time you've given us to the show. If someone wanted to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you like for me to send them?
They could go to DallasHardwick.com. I'm active on Instagram primarily as social media, which is at Dallas Hardwick. I've got a mailing list, and the book is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and everywhere else books are sold.
All right. You can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/428, and I'll be sure to have links there. But do make sure you get this book. This is one of the best health and fitness books I've read in a long, long time. So, Dallas, thank you so much for being a part of 40 Plus Fitness.
Thank you so much for having me.
I really enjoyed that conversation with Dallas, and I hope you did too. His four seasons approach really does resonate with me and the way I think our ancestors would have lived. So I do hope you'll check out his book and maybe even try some of the things that he's talking about, because taking care of our health is extremely important. And, you know, I had that kind of intro at the beginning talking about online personal training. If you're not getting done what you need to get done, you need support. And I want you to go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/health and take me up on that offer. This is the legacy rate. It's as low as I've ever offered it. It's there for you. Group online personal training is the way to go right now. You're stuck at home. You're busy at work. The things are going on. You need to get your health taken care of. You need a coach. Go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/health. Thank you. Next time on the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet Joyce Shulman and discuss her book, Walk Your Way to Better. Until then, have a happy and healthy week.